we chained our hearts in vain. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love no one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you. I can never lie, running for my life. I will always want you.
You can get in serious trouble for copyright infringement.
You got an organ going.
Yeah? Copyright is not doing crap!
Copyright? What's copyright?
It's the right of the
artist
to control.
Right now!
You know what time it is.
Welcome to
the copyright
experiment.
Welcome to the copyright experiment. What was that that we heard earlier? That was a little departure from our normal starting. But hey, that was fun, wasn't it? Jeff, you wanna tell us what that was?
He's coming in.
That was DJ Detweiler. She's kind of getting internet fame for her flute drops. So she takes a song and then puts a flute drop in it with really bad recorder sounds, or I guess arguably bad. I think it sounds terrible.
Flute drop bootleg.
Yeah, but it's kind of a funny thing that's catching on, and I just thought it was interesting. So,
well, yeah, the internet, its sense of humor is very absurd. So
yeah,
it doesn't surprise me. I also think it's pretty funny.
Yeah. And she even does like some drum and bass ones where she's doing like jungle bass, like the bum 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 bum, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. You should check it out. You know, if you find that funny at all. I just thought it was interesting.
I think it's fun. It might be the first time that Miley Cyrus has played on CITR.
And see, this is what the internet allows. It allows you know, people to express themselves in strange ways and.
Mm-hmm.
Gain some sort of traction, or I don't know, do something at least.
So yeah, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver's independent radio station, campus community, broadcasting out of UBC, where we are right now. You're listening to the Copyright Experiment. We're on Thursday nights at 11, and we're talking about intellectual property issues related to music and the ways in which we consume media now. We also play all free music, so if you've never heard the show before, all the music we play later in the show is freely available, and you can download it on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. We have all download links for all the songs that we play that are free. You can discover new artists and support them with your fanship.
In fact, even that DJ Detweiler flute drop, that's freely available as well.
Yes, yeah.
So everything we play.
If you really like the flute drops...
You can get a bunch more of them for all for free.
Download that. Bump it in your whip. Yeah, so today we got a new topic that we're talking about. What did we talk about last week? Last week was, that was the DMCA. This week we're talking about kind of a more curiosity than a news item. Today we're talking about the idea of copyright of performance and the implications that creates for the ways in which we consume performance, live performance, or just public displays, and what it means for people who want to use live performances or allow the public to consume things.
Yeah. So I think kind of a natural starting place is you know, we all hear it on the... I mean, you're hearing music on the radio right now that we pay for. You hear music as well in bars, in the background of TV shows or in elevators or whatever. and all of that stuff is copyrighted by someone, and technically that someone should be getting royalties for their airtime. And the way it's done is usually, you know, as we talked about before, through kind of a blanket payment of to whatever the respective organization is in that country or that they're affiliated with.
In Canada, that's covered by an organization called SOCAN, which we talked about on the SOCAN show, which you can find on the blog if you want to learn more about SOCAN. But SOCAN is the Society of, what is it, Society of Canadian Artists and Performers or something like that. It's not a very good acronym, but SOCAN, they are an organization that collects money from people who want to publicly broadcast or show the public something that is copyrighted, music usually. I guess, yeah, SOCAN covers music. And you become a member as an artist through SOCAN, and you're eligible for royalties when they distribute the money that they earn from these places that want to play things legitimately.
Yeah, and theoretically, as I read in one kind of lawyer's perspective of this, you can even prevent people from playing your songs if you don't want them to be. So, for example, there's that Beastie Boys song that what was the guy's name who passed away?
Adam Yauch.
Yeah, he didn't want any of his stuff used in commercials. So that's an example of somewhere where you can prevent performances of a certain kind, I guess. Mm-hmm. One thing that I was surprised by is I kind of thought that I was thinking to myself that, okay, most restaurants probably don't bother paying. They probably just play whatever music they want.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of friends that work at restaurants, and they just throw their iPod on, you know, who's to say that's being licensed, right?
Yeah, yeah, and the funny thing is it isn't. Because apparently in most, like, what I read, that the senior vice president for licensing of ASCAP, which is the U.S. version, or a U.S. version, said the overwhelming majority of restaurants utilize copyrighted music are licensed. So, according to her, you know, single opinion, I guess, it seems like most restaurants do in fact pay for it. But the way they pay for it is kind of interesting, because
yeah, I mean, how do we kind of handle this discrepancy of, you know, apparently everything is being licensed, but then the people working at these restaurants have free reign over whatever they put on the speakers, right?
Yeah, so you know, like, people just kind of, you know, they throw on their iPod. That's technically licensed, but is money even going to those artists?
So how is that licensed then?
Well, they have some kind of a payment that they're making to the organization, which is like a blanket payment, and then they kind of distribute it.
They being like the restaurant owner or the place that's the venue or the host.
Mm-hmm. And then that money kind of goes to whichever artists are kind of the organization, SOCAN or ASCAP, decides, you know, are getting played a certain amount based on, I don't even know what, really. Mm-hmm. It's probably like radio play or something.
Probably, yeah. And yeah, SOCAN collects money from radio stations as well, such as ours. And every week or every few days, every couple of months for a few days at a time, CITR tracks their plays down to the second and sends that up to SOCAN to tell SOCAN who they should pay their royalties to based on who we're playing.
Yeah, and restaurants that I know of don't do that. And so, you know, you have probably a lot of artists that are getting played at restaurants that are getting underrepresented, misrepresented, or not even included at all, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a curious thing. And I'm not sure if there's a really good solution to that other than, you know, you could have some kind of a, like, thing that when you get licensed, you have to monitor what kind of things you're playing. But that becomes really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you could plausibly think of a situation where, like, new public venues need to install something similar to, like, a Shazam type box.
Yeah, the fingerprints.
That can ID content and automatically send it to the organization that's tracking it.
Yeah, and the one thing I was curious, which I wasn't able to find, was a study saying, you know, showing if there was any kind of discrepancy in what artists are getting paid and what they should be getting paid based on how much their music is getting played.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's much of a discrepancy there. I imagine it's probably not that big, though, because, you know, the royalties they make from that are pretty small once it gets down to the actual artist.
Yeah, I mean, the power of it is that it's distributed across the entire country, right?
True.
So if you have national
millions
appeal,
of venues. Yeah.
And it's interesting. So restaurants we've been talking about, but and also live music venues also pay SOCAN royalties. And they're basically paying for the music they play, but also for the performances that happen under their roof. So when a band plays a song by someone else, they're licensed for that automatically if they're not playing their own music or something.
Yeah. And that's kind of surprising to me. I think it's interesting because it's like there's like a double copyright thing happening there.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the distinction between the copyright of the music itself and the copyright of like the master tape.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a situation where you're like in a restaurant situation, you're invoking the copyright on both the master tape and the song, but for a cover, you're not invoking that master tape because you're performing it yourself.
And so you're kind of creating your own master tape copyright right there.
Right. Yeah. Your own version of it, which is interesting. So we're not really sure if there's as far as I know, venues don't pay a different kind of license fee because of that. It all kind of just goes to SoCan anyway.
Yeah.
Even though they're only using, you know, theoretically in these cases when they're just having live music being performed, they're only invoking like half of the copyright package.
Yeah, so you'd think it would go to whoever owns that part of the copyright.
Right.
But who's to say? I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, SoCan is a very nebulous.
Yeah. I need the same word. And I think that brings us to the next kind of thing we want to talk about, which was live venues and kind of people bootlegging, which is a really popular thing these days. You know, you go to a concert and like, if you don't see someone with their smartphone out recording something, like you're probably in a time machine, a different generation. Like,
yeah,
it's impossible to not see that.
Yeah. there's definitely an incentive to try to capture the moment that you're experiencing by people just because it's so easy to.
Yeah. And it's interesting because some of the artists kind of speak out against this. So first, I should say that here on the Copyright Experiment, we have explicit language.
Well, it's funny because actually most artists who acknowledge this fact that people are taking photographs or recording their content they're more on the air and they're telling people not to do it because they don't want their photos being taken. They don't want their footage being recorded simply because they want to control their creativity.
Yeah.
You're going to give another perspective on this.
Yeah. And so this is kind of a different perspective, almost an opposite one, which is, so for example, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs at one of their shows wrote, "Please do not watch the show through a screen on your smart device camera. Put that shit away as a courtesy to the person behind you and to Nick, Karen, and Brian," which are the members. I thought that was interesting. Another one, the Stone Roses frontman said, "If you put your cameras down, you might be able to live in the moment. You might have a memory there of something you've never lived." You have a moment there of something you've never lived. So what he's trying to argue there is that when you record something, you have some kind of a copy of it, but you weren't really experiencing it because you're right. So busy, you know, trying to record it. And you know, these get a little bit philosophical and stuff, which isn't really the focus of our show.
The simulacra of the show.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's interesting to think about not only the economic effects, but also the social effects of sort of recording a show or bootlegging it. Mm-hmm. Both of which, you know, are important for creativity in a certain way. Because in my mind, you sort of de-incentivize people to do really interesting things that involve the crowd, or maybe you make it more of an incentive, I don't know. Because then it'll get people actually, you know, really experiencing and not just sitting back and recording it, or,
you know. Yeah, I think there's a bit of a prejudice to the, you know, because it's in the words, like, you know, you're sitting back and recording, you're not experiencing the show, right? But at the same time, you're also, by having people using their smartphones, you could argue also that they're bringing interactivity on a show to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that instead of just having the band up there and the audience back here, you're actually bringing in a level of interaction between them. And there's actually some artists who have kind of innovated in that sense. One of them, Dan Deacon, and he created this app last year that basically let you interact with the music that he was playing live. And I think it was, you could basically tell him in the moment what some sort of information, and then he'll take that information and use it in his set and stuff.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a way in which it really does help help sort of the creative process right there in that moment. It makes it more interesting.
Yeah, and it kind of gives a new a new meaning to performance almost, because performance for so many years, for hundreds of years, has really just been the expert on the stage and the listener.
Yeah, the humble
in the chair.
Listener is just kind of back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sort of also along that vein, there's people that are trying to capitalize on this by making it possible for concert goers to basically, as soon as they get done going to the concert, they can record, or they can download a recording which was done through the soundboard at the concert, and they can kind of save that with the video and the sound. So this kind of makes it easier for people to legally obtain a recording of the concert, so they can have a memory of it or whatever, and it has better quality, and it also, you know, supports the artist. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing. There's a few apps that do that. One's called Lively. Let's see, what was another one?
There's often
Sound Halo and Disc Live, or a couple other ones.
I know some artists will also maybe live broadcast their show if they're doing a really big show that a lot of people really want to see. But, you know, obviously they're limited by the constraints of the venue.
Mm-hmm.
There's bands that have, especially at music festivals, that will broadcast their set live so people can watch online too.
Yeah, and there's some things that, you know, like they broadcast mostly online, and it's only like a few people that actually get to be there live.
Right.
I think that's kind of an interesting spin to it as well.
Yeah, it kind of allows the intimacy of a small venue to be experienced by more than just the people there.
Yeah.
So I think one thing to take away from this is that performance and the style of performance and the way it works in the world is kind of also changing in similar ways that we were talking about, in how music distribution is changing and how music creation is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways in which that musicians are interacting with their fans are changing in almost every single way, including the way you perform with them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this kind of brings us to an interesting question, is, you know, should artists try and ban things? You know, what's... I mean, I guess it really comes down to what they want to do and what they think the effect is on the crowd. And no one can really say for them, you know, what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides of the coin, right? There's the subjective side where, you know, artists' wishes should be respected. But, I mean, we can speculate on what we think they should do well. What is maybe good for them or good for the state of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, one could argue that putting up bootlegs boosts their popularity, makes more people go to the concerts or buy their albums. Or, you know, they could say that, well, you know, now there's all these bootlegs out where people can just watch them. They don't have to go to the shows and they won't buy tickets.
So the shows are no longer sacred.
Yeah. And, you know, nothing's sacred. So
so that's our opinion.
Yeah. And one thing that came with my studies that I thought was interesting about this, my studies, it sounds like I'm in school, God, is that Apple is developing, or has developed, at least patented, a device which, let's say a user is trying to record something with their iPhone at an event, they have something which will make it so all their cameras turn off or all their phones turn off, just kind of in like a local area. And
that's pretty incredible.
That's kind of crazy, because at first you're like, okay, you know, sure, seems reasonable. But then you think about what else that could be applied for,
mm-hmm.
and this kind of goes outside of what we normally talk about, but it's just too crazy to not talk about it, and that is, you know, there's a riot somewhere and the police comes in and they just turn off all people's iPhones, and no longer can you take pictures of things that are happening which shouldn't be happening, for example. And that creates a filter, which to me sounds like a dystopian future, which is scary. And
yeah, it's kind of a swindle, because you're encouraging people to rely so much on these things that we've been accustomed to integrating to our life, and then you say, oh, actually, we have total control over that.
Yeah.
Which is, in some ways, already happens in the sense of streaming services, which now do that, and end user license agreements, which we talked about a few weeks ago.
And even the advertising content,
mm-hmm.
you know, to some degree, you know, like if you want to access all these things, you have to watch ads, and so that's kind of controlling what you're seeing and what your media.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you the illusion that you're possessing something, but you're really not.
It's not very democratic.
Technically, your software is just a license, and your music listening is just a license. It's not actually ownership of anything, which is very counterintuitive, but it seems like it's a direction we're further moving in.
Yeah, so that'd be an interesting thing to see what happens. It was patented in August of 2012. They haven't put it in the phones, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was something really interesting that I wanted to share, and we'll see what happens with it.
Yeah, hopefully we'll keep our eyes on it.
Yeah, hopefully nothing, you know, 1984-esque, I don't know, something like that.
Well, we're moving there. But anyway, well, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah, I think that's all I wanted to say.
Cool. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break then. If you, yeah, I'll let the answer to talking. We'll do some talking when we get back.
CITR's annual general meeting and volunteer appreciation night is on Monday, March 31st. We would like to double especially invite student members to the Tangent Cafe located at 2095 Commercial Drive for an evening of prizes, free appetizers, and tasty beverages. The AGM starts at 6:30 and we will have our annual volunteer appreciation awards ceremony afterwards, where every department gives out awards to volunteers who did an awesome job throughout the year.
My hands hurt. Can I stop cutting out these CD cases now?
No, you can't.
So be sure to come down to the Tangent Cafe Monday night, March 31st.
Hello, Josh.
Hello, Brandon. How are you today?
Quite well, thank you.
Good. Do you remember that ruckus around campus with the lights and the pedals last year?
Oh, you mean the UBC Bike Rave?
Oh, yes. What exactly is a UBC Bike Rave?
Well, it's a mobile celebration of music and lights.
Really? And how is it going to be different than last year?
Well, on March 21st, we'll have more lights and faster bikes.
Sounds interesting. Where can I find more information?
Check out the Facebook page at UBC Bike Rave 2.0 and our website at ubcbikerave.com.
That sounds excellent. I will bring my helmet and my penny farthing.
Well, I'll bring my father's penny farthing.
Well, I'll bring U-Town.
I'll bring UBC Rec.
I'll bring the calendar.
All right, then. Good show!
Sounds like a good show. Yes, we're back. We're going to play some music. DJ Mix by DJ Mochi on the decks in studio live. If you like any of the songs you hear, then go to our blog, copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. You can hear all of them for free. You can download them for free. Enjoy the mix. First track is by Canadian R&B group called Party Next Door. This is a remix of them. Sit back, relax, listen in.
I'm not a follower. I don't take things as they come. train me like an animal. Better keep your eye on my every move. There's no need to be so damn cruel. Baby, you got nothing to prove.
Little Numbers by Puzaki, remix of Thomas White from Montreal. Before that, the Aluna George remix you just heard was by DJ Snake. We'll be right back. as you can probably guess. Bad MF. So good. We got people joining us in the studio now. In one way or the other. Throwback remix. Mr. Carmack on the remix here. Goodbye. Drake remixes. Sons, the Garage Fix by Garage Legend DJQ. We'll be right back. Groovy little track. It's by a lady from San Francisco called J Flip.
Dirty Bird Girl.
Dirty Bird Girl. Track's called Work. Free download on the blog, like everything else. Copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com.
Fuck it up! rolling for the bitches in the hole, hanging out the window of a Bentley. I just met my connect, dropped out stone in the blood. I'm JP Brolin, ain't we ballin'? Got a problem with a nigga, bang that bout it. Nigga nowadays, jet ain't like shouting. Don't spit that cocaine like shout. Say they on fire, they flame, ain't like shouting. Flow don't go insane, I'm mental. Blowing presidential, 20 bricks off in the rental. We official ATLians, with plenty A to sell again. DEA on, I tell again, we're telling me go melody. Dope boy trap, nigga, shit, I did. Say you want 100 bricks, well, I bet I get it. Tell the other sucker nigga tryna rip my city. K-I-N-G, bitch, best get with it. All I know is go get it. Swag so silly, checks on deck, I'm wrecked up with it. Got a house, color parts, they stacked up with it. Got a Louis V bag, stay sacked up with it. Big diamonds in my Cuban, they won't be what we go shooting, man. And the A is undisputed, we some legend, best to do it, man. Buckingham Palace, I'm bucking on the motherfucking beat. God damn it, I ain't lost a step, but some of y'all niggas flout the death. Since players ball, I was called the best, and now they only call me daddy fat sacks. I ride a Cadillac with the diamond in the back of the sun rooftop. My daughter said I'm lacking the vitamin D, I need the sun, won't stop. Shine brighter, rhyme tighter than anybody in your top 10, my nigga. Like a postman, I deliver. See, I'm the letter with the anthrax in it. Pass that, hit it, sniff it, snort it, then gon' take a bump, shout it. I take a number cause I'm serving the jump to wanna jump up and get beat down. I'm brand new begin, brand new again, never get old. When I was little boy, they said I had an old soul, old gold. Riding with some pimps on the whole stroll. Now that's loco, and you're local, and I'm global. That means worldwide, like the rising tide. I'm gonna subside and rise again like clockwork. C-Bone is gonna show you how to go. Non-violent though, no violence, just style and hope. From the birthplace of MLK, where everything ain't okay, but KKK, ay! I'm on Malcolm than Martin, come get some, be a target. Standing in the kitchen with the AK, AK, A.
Big boy. King shit. For that was Boy James Littre.
Listen, now this is the A-Town. Come on the premises if you wanna play with death. You get stung like the crocodile hunter. Got them racks slinging in packs. And no, we can't leave the sacks alone. Higher than assistant, cause my weed need a chaperone. And then big boy, you'll pass the lighter. I'm convinced that we started the California brush fires. 1, 2, and it don't stop. So many whips at my crib, your chick came to bitch, thought it was a roadblock. Spending cash so fast, you think I'm foolish. And I love chicks with ass, or an arch like St. Louis. Who's it? Got chicks hugging my nuts like a Speedo. Cause when I'm on the mic, I go for broke like T.O. But we know I'm rich and pay the bills at my mother house. Atlanta crib's jealous cause I'm chilling at my other house. Yeah, you may be able to out trap me, but none of you niggas will ever out rap me.
Kid named Tennyson from Edmonton, 17 years old, making some pretty good shit at a rec young age. P80 out of Halifax. It's called Real Levels, and it's real good.
On some real level.
getting a little glitchy, close out the night. This is almost like a posse track. A who's who of glitch hop. Got Mr. Bill, Circuit Ben, Freddie Todd, Goldie, all contributing expertise. Before this track, we heard a brand new Machine Drum remix by Obey City. You can get on the Machine Drum newsletter. But that's going to about wrap it up for our show tonight. Thanks for listening. If you liked any of the tracks you heard, check out the blog, copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. That's copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. We got download links for everything, and all our past shows too. Check it out. Enjoy the rest of your night. Pierre should be coming in pretty soon to bring you through until 6 a.m. See ya.
Magic. I'm pretty bundled up.